One of Asia's leading financial centers prepares to relax COVID-19 restrictions despite a new wave of infections. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Hong Kong has some of the world's strictest COVID-19 mitigation policies, but the government announced today that starting next month, it will begin easing widespread restrictions, including lifting a ban on flights from 9 countries like the US and UK. The move to eliminate strict pandemic measures, though, comes as the island recently had the world's highest COVID death toll. But Hong Kong's leader, Carrie Lam, says the decision is important for socioeconomic development. And as the BBC's Andrew Wood explains, the city has been hard hit by the pandemic for the last 2 years.
Hong Kong, I think, has suffered an awful lot over the past 2 years because the restrictions have been so strict. You know, having to spend at one point, you know, 3 weeks in quarantine if you left Hong Kong and wanted to come back again, that it meant as a business hub, it wasn't a great place. The Hong Kong government is bowing to having to rebalance the equation that an awful lot of other governments have had to rebalance recently. What point do the economic effects of restricting COVID become so onerous that they're worse than the effects on society of the disease itself?
I'm just looking at one report that said there was a coffin shortage last week and hospitals have been overwhelmed with patients. So how well has Hong Kong been doing in controlling its latest COVID outbreak?
Yeah, you're right about the coffin shortage. At the other end of the scale, though, you think about only 200 deaths in just under 2 years to start with. Now we're having hundreds of deaths a day. But it's because the government never really prepared for the outbreak of something like Omicron. Most of the people, perhaps, who are dying tend to be older people who have not been vaccinated and perhaps were lulled into a false sense of security by the success of the restrictions in the first 2 years. Now, though, the government's weighing things up and decided that it's time to reopen Hong Kong a bit, and I think that business will be a lot happier.
The BBC's Andrew Wood for us in Hong Kong. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Well, some breaking news out of China to tell you about now. A passenger plane with more than 130 people on board has crashed in the southern part of the country. State media report that China Eastern Airlines Boeing 737-800, that's not the 737 MAX, crashed in a rural area northwest of Hong Kong. There's no word yet about the cause of that crash, but it's feared there are no survivors. The BBC's Stephen McDonnell has more from Beijing.
China Eastern flight MU5735 took off from Kunming, bound for Guangzhou. According to state media reports, the Boeing 737 crashed near Tungshan in the southern Chinese province of Guangxi. There were 132 people on board, and there are fears that none of them have survived. China generally has a good air safety record, and there's so far been no information relating to the cause of this crash. The country's last major plane accident was in August 2010. Then a flight from Harbin crashed in Yichun, killing 42 people.
That's Stephen McDonnell reporting there. Well, China Eastern, as he said, is one of the big three state-owned airline companies and one of the biggest in Asia. The last large-scale fatal air crash was in 2010. Air safety and aviation standards in China have improved since then, and the industry has expanded in recent decades. You can head to bbc.com/news for the very latest details. Ukraine has rejected an early morning deadline from Russia today to surrender its besieged southeastern city of Mariupol. That is keeping global stock markets on edge today and pushing global oil prices higher. The Brent and West Texas benchmarks are up in the 4% range to $112 and $109 per barrel. Meanwhile, today, Moscow's stock exchange has partially reopened after 3 weeks. It's allowing only loan bonds issued by the Russian government, though, to trade. Well, Germany and Qatar have agreed to resume discussions about a long-term supply deal for liquefied natural gas. That comes as Germany and the rest of Europe look to diversify their energy imports, moving away from Russian supplies after the country's invasion of Ukraine. As talks continue, though, and as we've reported for the last few weeks, energy prices are soaring to record levels. Here in the UK, the National Grid wants to start blending hydrogen into its existing gas network by 2025. That is a move that would help not only with diversification of sources, but sourcing greener supplies, as the BBC's Rick Kelsey explains.
We're on this remote airbase near Hadrian's Wall, high in the hills with sporadic pine trees sometimes touching low clouds. Tony Green, head of hydrogen for the National Grid, is with us.
Blending is taking the natural gas that we've got today running in the network and starting with a small quantity of hydrogen. It's just another gas. We mix it up at that point.
Some of the network's biggest pipelines have been brought here.
They normally carry methane across the 5,000-mile network to homes and businesses. Now, though, they're being tested to blend hydrogen. Eventually, they want to replace natural gas completely with low-carbon hydrogen, either produced from wind or where natural gas is steamed and the CO2 emissions captured and stored.
Hydrogen production is planned to start here in the UK in the northeast and the northwest by around that 2025 period, so it's entirely possible that we're going to see that. On top of that, we're seeing some of the green hydrogen production, some larger scale plans coming on. So mid-decade, yeah, we can absolutely see this happening.
From Cumbria, we've come north to Windy Fife, the site of a former coal mine. Here, 100% hydrogen to homes is happening next year in a world first, providing heating and cooking to 300 houses by renewable power. You might be able to hear this enormous 200-metre wind turbine that's going to produce electricity that will power an electrolyser that splits water into hydrogen and oxygen.
It's super exciting that something that's literally a few hundred metres away from where I live is going to send power and energy to all the houses down here.
Caroline Cunningham is a fitness instructor in Brookhaven who signed up to the £28 million scheme, which involves a free hydrogen-ready boiler and cooker. Catriona Eldman is funded to research hydrogen at the University of Edinburgh and thinks it could be the 2030s before green hydrogen is on par cost-wise with fossil fuels.
There's no denying we've got a very big challenge ahead of us. Even globally, only 4% of our hydrogen is generated from green hydrogen. So there's a lot to do. We just need to make it bigger. If the market is there, the hydrogen will be generated.
That's the BBC's Rick Kelsey reporting from the border between England and Scotland there. And in London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.